I'd like now to welcome back to the show Diane Karp and Michelle Laflamme-Childs of the Santa Fe Art Institute. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi, Mary Charlotte.
Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you.
Happy
so
New Year.
Much. Happy New Year to you and to everyone out there. 2012 is going
Radio
to be
Land.
Is 2012 is going to be a marked improvement over 2011.
Yes, I think it will be.
Based on what evidence now?
Well, wait a minute. We have to base this on evidence? What are you, a scientist?
I'm calling 2011 a rebuilding year.
All right. Anyway, we're here to talk about your first great action of 2012, which is a workshop for artists. It's called Creative Capital. I guess the whole big concept is called Creative Capital. And then within that, there's ways that artists basically learn what? To be business people?
Well, actually, let's give a little bit of history. Back when the National Endowment for the Arts stopped giving individual grants to artists, a group of foundations got together and they formed an organization, another nonprofit called Creative Capital. And the idea was that they were going to give grants directly to artists for specific projects. And they started and they gave pretty substantial grants to very interesting artists for amazing projects. And then suddenly realized about a year in that the artists didn't quite know how to manage the money, didn't know how to plan, didn't know how to budget, and they ended up short of funds or without the necessary sort of personal equipment to get the project done. And they stood back and they said, okay, so what do we do about this? And they pulled together a whole array of really talented professionals, people in banking and accounting, people in branding, people in strategy, people in business, and said, would you come together and help some of our artists so that they could better manage these substantial funds that we are giving them for their projects? And they saw such an incredible difference in the way in which these artists and performers and poets managed these projects. And they said, okay, this is essential. If we're going to give these grants, we have to support them and teach them how to be more responsible and practical and, yes, business-like about managing the money and the budget and the project. And then they sat back and said, wait a minute. Artists and writers and performers and creators all around could use this kind of professional development support as well. And so on top of their individual grants for artists and the support they gave their artists, they started this project called Capital Development Professional Capital
Creative Capital.
Creative Capital. Thank you, Michelle. I store all my important information
in her head.
It's mutual.
And so they started the Creative Capital Professional Development Workshops. And 5 years ago, we brought their whole team here to Santa Fe to run a 2.5-day workshop for the three counties, Bernalillo, Santa Fe, and Sandoval counties.
Wow.
And we wanted very much to bring them back again sooner, but it's very expensive. And so this year we decided to go for a grant in support of it, and we did, and we won the grant, which means that part of this fabulous series of workshops, we're doing two, and Michelle will talk all about them. Part of that is underwritten, and the rest of it we're going to have to figure out how to
charge
fund.
For it or whatever.
Yes, there are small fees.
One thing I have to say is that while I'm sure, and you'll talk about this in some detail, it's very important for artists to learn these skills. I have found in my vast experience, and I used to work in an artist-run organization, that as far as groups of people go, artists are the most resourceful people in stretching a dollar that I have ever met. I worked for an organization that on what would be the salary of the guy working at the business across the street produced like 37 weekends of performance and installation over the course of a year.
They actually say that in the Creative Capital Workshop. They say over and over that their artists definitely have that unique ability and that this is sort of taking them one step beyond having to stretch the dollar and understanding how to manage it in the way that it's not so much a stretch. But they acknowledge that in those workshops, that
yeah.
These are incredibly resourceful people.
One of the things that they discovered was that if I'm going to write a grant as a performing artist or as a visual artist or as a filmmaker or as a writer, whatever, for a project that I want to do, my tendency is to say I'm going to take this whole year for this project and I will need the following budget. And the budget rarely ever includes food, money to pay the rent, money to hire someone to help you transcribe all of those interviews. In other words, the tendency is to be so creative about stretching a dollar that they don't really think deeply about what the money could do and how a little bit better organization or a little bit more money might allow them to do a much more interesting or important project.
Well, one of the things with that what you're talking about is leads to is the realization that if you don't budget money for food and rent, then you have to have a second job. Mm-hmm. And if you have a second job, then that beautiful focus that comes with having one full-time project is lost.
Exactly. And so this year, we were fortunate enough to get a little bit of underwriting in a form of a grant through the Kresge Corporation, Kresge Foundation. And it allows us, and Michelle's going to talk at length, to bring two very distinctive creative capital professional development workshops. And they're going to be at the Art Institute January 20th, 21st, 22nd. That's the first one. And then on the
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep. Friday evening.
And then on Monday, the 23rd, is an all-day workshop. And I'm going to shut up and let Michelle do the major talking, since this is a project that she's been working on all year.
The one that we did in 2006 that Diane mentioned is what they call their core development program. And I think of it, I went and observed one of those, so I went through it myself in a way. And I think of that almost as the survey course in creative capital programming. So in that one, you learn a little bit about how to talk about you and your work publicly, how to market it on the internet a little bit, how to manage your money, how to write grants, all of those kinds of things. This time we've taken a more focused approach and we're bringing Internet for Artists is the Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday workshop. It's essentially a weekend retreat. And Verbal Communications is the Monday workshop.
Verbal Communications, because so many people work in nonverbal media.
Because so many people don't speak very well about themselves or their work. I mean, there's that joke about the elevator speech, which comes from the corporate world. But if you were stuck in an elevator with a gallerist and you had 60 seconds to describe your work, many, many, many artists would be incapable of doing that in a way that would engage that gallerist.
You know, it's interesting. I participated last year, and I'm doing it this year, in a seminar where scientists and journalists talk to each other. And scientists have to learn to do exactly that, the elevator speech, the cocktail party speech.
Yep.
And it's really, really hard.
It is. So this that whole day is focused on that on Monday. And it ends with a mocktail party where certain people mill around and act as interested gallerists or whoever it might
be. Or museum curators.
And then the artists have to engage casually and nonchalantly and be able to discuss their work very clearly. The bigger one is the Internet for Artists weekend. And that was our focus. Diane mentioned that the one 5 years ago was for those three counties. This was a statewide and still is a statewide initiative. The idea being that there are a lot of rural artists here that don't benefit from living in Santa Fe or Albuquerque or Las Cruces, where there might be a nice urban center for work, showing, and learning. So we thought Internet for Artists would be good because many of those people may lack the skills they need to market their work on the internet, which is a great way for them to have their work more accessible to more people. So it's open, and we're hoping that rural folks will apply for that workshop. That workshop opens with, in the normal core weekend, each artist has 5 minutes to present their work on that Friday evening. So that entire Friday evening is each artist talking about themselves for 5 minutes. So you kind of get to know each other and what they're about.
And there are 24 artists, writers, filmmakers, whoever it is that ends up being selected.
Yeah. The Internet for Artists tweaks that a little bit to show folks how important it is that you essentially curate your presence on the internet as an artist. And rather than you presenting your own work for 5 minutes, some other person in the workshop is assigned you, and they have to research you on the internet and present your work on your behalf.
Oh, interesting.
Not having had any conversation with you. And the stuff that comes out of it makes it quite clear how important it is that you know how your work is presented on the internet, that you understand the importance of how it's credited, where it sits, what's up there. You know, your party pictures from college maybe shouldn't come up when you're being Googled, those kinds of things. And I guess it's kind of a horrifying and exciting experience for people to recognize, wow, I thought I had my whole internet thing under control, but maybe I don't.
So when somebody else presents your work, the idea is that this is the presence, the internet presence that you have so far, and it's basically being reflected back to you.
Yeah. In a way that you don't, you know, just like you read your own writing, sometimes you'll miss your own typos. You think that you've got your internet presence all set up the way you want it, or maybe you don't. So, many people don't have a strong internet presence, and that'll come up too. You know, oh, I couldn't even find you on the internet, or there are two people named Diane Karp who are working as an artist. One of them's a sculptor, and one's a performance artist, and you've got the wrong one.
So. Right, and they're both me. Shh, don't tell anyone. Now, the other thing that it will focus on is what you need to have on your own website. You know, the kinds of information, the kinds of downloadable information that you want to have on your website. It really is a way of sort of tweaking and refining the kinds of information that a curator, let's say, mm-hmm. could find if they were going to be doing an exhibition on artists who work with sound, writers who use onomatopoeia, and scientists who are interested in, you know, the audio area of the brain. And so they could just, for instance, and it happens a lot now, go on the internet yep. and start looking for artists and writers and scientists all involved in the same sort of area of interest. And if you've been working with sound all your life, but you haven't been listed or you haven't gotten yourself sort of connected to the internet in a way that would allow that to be retrievable and identifiable, well, you know, you've just missed an enormous
exactly.
neutral opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and there's an added dimension, which is that every artist has to have their website really be a reflection of their creativity in some way. I mean, it can't just be some standard issue website that, you know, we've all gone to homemade websites that don't really look all that good, but the information is there, but you've got to go way beyond that. You basically, even if you're not a graphic designer, you got to either, well, that's the thing. It's like if your resources are stretched, you either have to get a graphic designer or become one, or, I mean, this is the problem, or part of the problem, with the stretching a dollar thing.
Yes, yes. So that's the 3-day workshop, and that's going to be a phenomenal opportunity for all creative people to build and think about and learn to better understand what it means to have an internet presence, and what that can do for you or how it can work against you. And then on Monday...
Yeah, verbal communications will be on Monday, which will focus specifically on, as we discussed earlier a little bit, things like the elevator pitch, artist statement, and how you verbalize that as opposed to how it might be written down, just how one communicates who he or she is and what he or she does in a way that's compelling.
And that's tricky, too, because there are some people, and I noticed this again when I was working in the arts years ago, there are some people whose work is very clever. And a lot of those people got the grants, and they were really good at communicating verbally and at pitching and stuff like that. And there are some people whose work was a lot deeper and less flashy. And it was, let's say, if it was visual art, it was probably the kind of work that you'd want to spend the rest of your life with, that thing on your wall that you will mm-hmm. never take down.
Or a film project or a musical project or a theater project. Absolutely. And when they become complex topics and the work is really deep and meaningful, it gets harder and harder mm-hmm. to take 60 seconds and describe to someone exactly
right.
what it is yeah.
right.
that you're working on.
So what do you do?
You take a verbal communications class from Creative Capital at the Santa Fe Art Institute, and there's your first step right there.
Yeah. Now, another thing that artists have to deal with is some of them are very good self-promoters, many are not. And having that self-promotion, I call it a gene, you know, some people just seem to be born with it. Is that something you can cultivate, or do you have to somehow find a way to get somebody else to promote you if you're not naturally that kind of, I don't want to say egotistical, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, and they actually talked about that in the core workshop that I went to. They had a really interesting conversation about the fact that for many artists, self-promotion is distasteful. That was what the sort of the conversation was around. And so people, it's not that they're not naturally good at it or inclined to it, it's that it becomes salesy and commodity-y, and that's kind of icky, and you make art because you love art and because you're moved to make work, not because you want to sell it. Although if you want to be a working artist, sometimes you've got to either get grants or you've got to sell it. That's how you'll do it. And the Creative Capital Workshop, the core workshop, does do that. They really try to get people past that hump, understand how crucial it is to being a full-time working artist. And then, in fact, it's just the opposite of that sort of distasteful, icky thing. Having to work a waitressing job might be the thing that's getting in the way of you making art. And if you can find a way to make money as an artist, maybe you can stop the distraction of having to wait tables for a living. So that it's just a matter of that mindset.
And another thing that you need to keep in mind is that you're right, there are some people who are natural self-promoters, but sometimes that natural self-promotion supersedes the meaning and the value of the art because it's so smooth and it's so slick and it's so facile that people sort of back away from it. And what this is really about is even if you are good at self-promoting, it gives you a way of sort of centering and modifying how you present with fabulous feedback from professionals from all of the creative sectors who can say to you, you know, that sounds really good, but let me tell you what my takeaway is. My takeaway is this is somebody who's facile, not someone who really is describing their ideas to
me.
And so even those people who might think that they are really comfortable talking about their work may discover to their amazement that the reason, despite their comfort at talking to their work, that they've never managed to get anybody interested in it is that they may not be presenting it as well as they might.
That's a really, actually, a good segue into something else that I was hoping to talk about, and you made it easier than me just having to launch into it. And that is sort of the side benefit, the tangential benefits of Creative Capital workshops, especially the long ones. And this can be a particularly long one because folks can take them together, so it can actually be a 3.5-day kind of deal. And that is that it's, like the residency program is often described, it's, for many artists, it's an opportunity to sit with other artists and be recognized as an artist and work with other artists as an artist. And so many of us, and I'll include myself in that, have to work jobs where you can't engage in your everyday life as an artist. And so to have a retreat like that, where you are engaging with other artists as an artist or as a writer or as a whatever form of creativity you partake in, is really, really wonderful. And I know from the workshop that we had 5 years ago, which happened on the first weekend of my employment at the Art Institute, those artists, many of them are still in touch. And they
With each other.
And the group that participated in that core weekend in 2006, they still get together regularly. They still talk about work with each other. They still talk about what they learned. And many of them are, as a result, we're friendly with them at the Art Institute. They're people that have become sort of inside circle of the Art Institute who come and hang out. And it's just a really wonderful experience all the way around. Besides the obvious learning that one gets from it, it's that Santa Fe, I think, needs to work on its artistic community, its local artist bonding, and these are perfect opportunities to do that.
It struck me recently, I was thinking about this over the Christmas break, that artists as a community tend to be, I don't mean a community working with each other, but just as a group, tend to prefigure whatever the next movement is in science and in philosophy and even in politics by a matter of years or decades.
Sometimes it happens in a real sort of coincidental system of time, temporally. The early 20th century, it's fascinating because you've got Alban Berg and Webern in music, and you've got Picasso and Braque transforming the language of the visual arts. And if you look at theater, you begin to see the very same kinds of things happening where it's no longer the audience and the actors and the nature of that relationship. It happens
often. And you have the end of Newtonian physics.
And you have the end of classical physics and the beginning of relativity physics, absolutely. And you have a whole transformation in mathematics as well. So the sciences, the visual arts, the literary arts, music, all went into an upheaval that was literally a response to the way in which people were perceiving the world and themselves in the world. And so it's not just that the visual arts prefigure, but I think it's that the visual arts configure in a way that is accessible to the general public, because you immediately see changes and differences that you might not understand if we were talking about, you know, the discovery of the Higgs boson.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like for most people, yeah, so Higgs boson, I don't really get it.
Right.
But if it's something dramatic in dance, oh, and the same thing was going on in dance, obviously, not just in theater. But if you think about the changes that are happening, the idea that suddenly there is this tendency for collaborations that wasn't part of the 20th century.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The thing that I'm noticing now is that if there's any characteristic you can ascribe to the arts in general, it's people coming together rather than working in their attic with the hanging light bulb in the garret alone, sort of the heroic genius thing. That's kind of over.
Well, the heroic genius thing, honestly, was a sort of a construct of the late 19th century.
Yeah, but that was the mythology of our entire...
That was the mythology. But in fact, you know, some of the most powerful and creative artists in all disciplines are people who, if you met them in the supermarket, you would think they were, you know, working blokes that had jobs just like you have, and you'd never sort of stop and see them as living in a garret with a light bulb. But I think the point is that the world has become so complex and so filled with information and data and aspects that we have to wrestle with, that the tendency in the 20th century was for people to become super specialized, to take a tiny little area, move off into it, and work all by themselves. We realize that those little areas have to be connected, and the reconnection is happening not only in the sciences, but in business, but it's also happening across the arts, so that you'll find visual artists working with musicians, working with theater people, working with, you know, film people, and all of these projects coming together in many new and very exciting ways.
And Bill McKibben. And the Occupy movement. I mean, these things all seem to be part of a bigger picture.
Absolutely. That is absolutely the case. And so another aspect of these sort of work, the creative capital workshops that we're offering, is that idea of connecting. It's just what Michelle was saying before. Santa Fe has a tendency, like most arts communities, of being separate individuals. And what we're working at addressing is making connections between creative people, because they often are their best support.
Yeah. We're talking to Diane Karp and Michelle Laflamme-Childs of the Santa Fe Art Institute about the Creative Capital workshops that are coming up in a few weekends. Now, let's talk about people. I don't know if you want to name names or if you want to talk about the kinds of things they're doing, but like, give us some examples of people who have done this and been able to take their work to a new level and how that happened.
I'll let Diane talk about that. So she was more familiar with the last workshop.
I think one of the people that, for me, was most... There are a couple people that were most fascinating. Chris Jonas, who is part of Little Globe, took the Creative Capital workshop. And I think for Chris, it allowed for him, who had been part of a collaboration, to begin to see himself as an individual creator in a way that he never really stopped to think about before. Or if he did think about it, I think it allowed him to sort of clarify and condense a lot of the things that he was hoping to be able to do in terms of his own professional practice, both as part of the collaborative, as part of Little Globe, and as an individual composer and videographer and performer. Susan York, who is an incredibly accomplished sculptor and a person who makes beautiful graphite drawings, really had a kind of hurdle to get over in terms of her professional presence as an artist out in the larger world. And it allowed her to step back, look at how she had been engaging, and strategize. It helps the artists to plan out where they'd like to be in a year, mm-hmm. where they'd like to be in 2 years,
yep.
where they'd like to be in 3 years, and having clarified and focused on what they really want, which a lot of us are incapable of thinking about because it feels so self-absorbed and selfish. But the truth in the matter is, once you figure out what you'd like to accomplish, then you begin to have the tools to figure out how to build a strategy and a game plan mm-hmm. to get there.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is intentionality. And it's focused intentionality within a community that can help.
With support.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's the other thing for so many people is really hard because you get ideas, you think about where you'd like to be, and then there's some roadblock. Like, I don't know how to do website design, or right. I don't know how to manage, accounting, manage my books or whatever. And you get beyond that and you can do anything.
Yeah.
Well, and it's something like the other aspect, which is fascinating, is, okay, I'm going to go for a major grant. And I have to put together a statement of who I am, a statement of my history, a statement of what the project is, a statement of what the project is going to contribute to the field. Mm-hmm. I've got to build a budget, and I'm standing there with my budget thinking, do I ask for X? Do I ask for Y?
Right.
How much X do I ask for? How much Y do I ask for? Because if I write this budget in such a way that the people read it and go, this is ridiculous.
This person doesn't know what they're talking about.
This person doesn't have the vaguest idea.
Yeah.
It could work against me so dramatically.
Yeah.
But if I have this guidance of, okay, this is what people are really looking for. And go ahead. Throw in the fact that you want to build a new website. Throw it in.
Mm-hmm.
You may not get all the money, but maybe you want to put it in and do it in a way that says, I'm going after 4 grants to rebuild my website. So from Michelle's foundation, I only need this much. And from Mary Charlotte's foundation, I'm only going to need that much. And you demonstrate that you really get how to get it done, even if you've never done it before.
Now, you have extended the deadline, so people have until Thursday midnight to apply. They can go to SFAI, which stands for Santa Fe Art Institute, sfai.org, download an application and get it to you, and so on. And how are people selected? What are the criteria?
There is a wonderful committee. I think at this point it's 8 people spreading across all kinds of disciplines. And they're really going to look primarily at, there are 2 categories they'll be looking at. And the application, once one fills out the application, it'll become more clear what I'm talking about. There'll be simply a quality of work rating. So it's just looking at how interesting, innovative, unique, all of those kinds of general categories for artistic work.
And that's really important because if you've got somebody, I mean, we all know that situation where you've got somebody whose self-image is much lesser than their actual work, and then other people whose self-image is much greater than their actual work. And the first one you can work with, the second one is just embarrassing.
So to keep quality of work really, or interest, it doesn't, quality is such a weird word, but you know what I mean, that sort of overall interestingness, to use an art world term of work. And then the second rating is simply on, after having answered a few questions in the application, how much does the reviewer feel that this workshop will benefit this applicant? So it's a combination of those 2 things so that it balances out.
So you still have spots open in both workshops?
Well, there will be more applicants than there will be spaces, but that's a good thing.
Okay. So people can, once again, go to sfai.org to find an application. Is the application hard to fill out? Is it pretty perfunctory?
This is the easiest application we've ever had because it is now 100% online and the system walks you through every step of the way. So it's a piece of cake. So what you do when you go to sfai.org is you'll find a link to the Slide Room application and it'll take you there. The application is free. The workshop has a fee, but it's small compared to what it could be based on the grants that we've gotten to cover it.
Yes.
Right. And there's always, a little bit of fee helps people feel like they have some skin in the game, so it makes it it gives value, which, so it's going to be great. Apply.
All right.
And thank you so much for having us on. You know, one of the things that we value so much when we talk about collaborating and working together is the fact that we work with a lot of other arts organizations, but we also, KSFR is our partner. And, you know, we could do the best things in the world, but getting the word out is essential. So we are very grateful for the amazing job you do. And
well,
all
we
the work
feel
that
way about you.
KSFR does. Santa Fe is an astounding community.
It's
and
really
we want
pretty great.
All those creatives out there to know that this is a phenomenal opportunity to move your practice, professional practice, a leap ahead. This will give you a touchdown, not just a first down.
Oh, it
nice
is
nice in this day
season.
Of bowls.
Yes. That's right.
Diane Karp and Michelle LaFlamme-Childs are with the Santa Fe Art Institute, SFAI.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks,
Mary
Charlotte,
for having us.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And ladies and gentlemen, the soundtrack in the background during this half hour has been Diane's lovely grandchildren.
That's right. Gabe and Ben made it on the radio.
And I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Raina Dineen. She's principal of the Santa Fe School for the Arts and Sciences, and students Logan John Luis and Tilkara Webb, who are also at that school, and they are from Youth United, and they're representing the Hooked on Books campaign, which is a project of the Alliance for Literacy. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. So let's talk about the Hooked on Books campaign. What's it all about?
So the Hooked on Books campaign is really a campaign designed by kids for kids, and they can tell you why they got involved and what motivated them, but basically our whole goal is to really help bring up literacy and get kids excited about reading.
So it's really a student-run and conceived-of campaign?
Yes, absolutely. And I guess what has motivated me and driven me to take part in this campaign is this year we are learning about how can you make a difference in the world, and can one person make a change? And that really got to me, and I was thinking about if every single person in the whole entire world could read, how big a difference it would make.
And, yeah, just like Logan said, we've been learning about activism, and I really think it's really powerful because it's by kids, and it's kids helping other kids, and I think it can make a big difference in kids and in their lives, and they can, if they can read, they can, you know, follow their dreams and have all the opportunities.
So what do you actually do? I mean, unfortunately, New Mexico is not the world's best place for literacy.
Yeah, we're actually 48th in the country in literacy. So we've just been doing contests, and so the Hooked on Books campaign, we have different tiers to get kids hooked on books.
What was the first tier I think already happened? Is that right? What is it, or what was it?
The first tier are the contests, and we are right now we're having the second contest, and it's finishing next Sunday.
What's the contest?
The contest is make a cover for your favorite book. Like an alternate cover? Yeah, illustrate an alternate cover for your favorite book and then explain why you chose the cover.
Have you gotten a lot of entries?
So far, I've gotten about 80.
Yeah, I mean, the first contest was sort of a trial. It was who can come up with the best ideas to get other kids hooked on books. And we had entries from about 23 different schools, over 130 entries. Kids came up with amazing ideas. The winner won an iPad. Second place won a BMX bike. And third place won a Kindle. And so now the second contest, we're expecting double or triple that many entries for this second contest. And each month we'll have a different contest.
What were some of the ideas they came up with?
Ooh, all right. So our third place winner, Jacob Romero.
Jason
Romero. Sorry, thanks, Raina. Anyways, his idea was to get kids to read banned books. So if it's kind of like a reverse psychology. If we ban books and kids just see that they're banned, they're going to think to themselves, well, let's see. Well, I wonder why this is banned. I should read and find out. So it's kind of like that, and we actually just put a PSA up on YouTube, and that is pretty much explains his idea.
Now, that there was a South Park episode about that, where they write a banned book.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. whose title I will not say on the radio, but I'll tell you afterwards. You can find it. Anyway, so that's a great idea.
So because of Jason's idea, now on our website, we have a whole list of books that have been challenged or banned in different states. And his idea was, if kids see this list, they're going to be really enticed and intrigued. Why were these books challenged? I better read and find out.
Yeah. What are we talking about books that were banned sometime in the last 100 years,
exactly,
kind of thing?
Like, there's the top 100, and then there's some classics that have been banned, and then there's books that just continually make certain people upset.
Like what?
Like the Harry Potter books. Or
yeah, a book that I know off the top of my head is To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird was banned?
Yeah, it was. So
why?
A lot of stuff in there, I guess.
The language and... Yeah, it's like, depending on where you are in the country, or sometimes it's different religious groups, people feel like young people shouldn't be reading these books, and so they challenge them or try to get them banned.
And so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, and just if they're banned, if something's banned, it kind of makes someone want to know more about it.
So yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like a mystery for the kids, and maybe it'll make reading fun for them, too.
It also would make the people who would like to ban books maybe think, because that's the best publicity a book could possibly get, is if you ban it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What were some of the other ideas?
Well, the second place winner,
Jeremiah Aguirre. From Cesar Chavez.
He had lots of amazing ideas. One of the ideas was to make a trailer out of your favorite...
That was the first place winner.
Okay.
Tell us that one.
Sure. The first place winner,
Ella Rappaport.
She had the idea to make a trailer out of your favorite book. And so
like
to
a movie
publicize,
trailer?
Yeah. Like, as long, you know, if it wasn't a movie already. And to act it out and have costumes.
Oh, so the rule was it couldn't be a movie yet. It was a book that had not been made.
You know, so you can make it your own.
Oh, very interesting.
To get kids to want to read that book,
She
thought we could have a contest that would have kids make a trailer. She came up with a whole bunch of cool contest ideas.
It's kind
of
it's kind of like, would a kid rather sit down and read a book or watch TV or watch a movie or something like that? So she used that to her advantage and picked up that idea.
And sometimes if you see some like a really good idea, like if you see it first, then you might want to read it.
Right. And there was one more, the second place winner.
Right, Jeremiah Aguirre. Okay, so he had a lot of great ideas, and some of them involved things that we are already doing, like being reading buddies, like hooking up kids. But then he had ideas like having reading club sleepover parties and getting kids in your neighborhood to bake cookies and get together and read books and have fun. And he listed like 5 different ways that he personally thought, like he suggested parents could read to their kids more, and he just had a whole list of really neat ideas.
Yeah.
So all of this is part of the Hooked on Books campaign. It's a project of the Alliance for Literacy. Now, how did the two of you, I assume that if you're here talking to me today, you are already hooked on books.
Yeah, I would say so.
What are some of your favorite books, each of you?
Oh, gosh. I'm currently reading the last book in the Inheritance series called Inheritance. Other people may know it as the Ink Aragon series. Dragon Riders, stuff like that. And for me, I think it would appeal to kids probably from... Well, first of all, kids who really like fantasy and fiction and that air of intensity, because there's so many secrets in all those books. And I suggest it to probably 5th graders and above, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of the content in there can be hard to understand at times, so...
Well, I think one of my aha books... that I suggest for 5th graders and 6th graders and up are the Mysterious Benedict Society books. And I really like kid power, as we're doing in this campaign. So, and there are 3 books, and it's really about these 3 kids that are like fighting against evil, I guess, but they're also being kind of like going undercover and being spies, kind of. So, yeah.
Now,
I like that.
Did your parents read to you?
Yes. I had, my mom is, I live in a bilingual household, so my mom read to me in Spanish, and my dad read to me in English.
Nice.
So that really builds a strong base.
Yeah.
When you're young, to have your parents read to you.
How about you?
My dad did read to me until I was probably about 9 or 10. He actually read me a book that really, really scared me. So we kind of quit it after that. I'm trying to, even now, I'm trying to convince him to keep reading to me, but time does not permit it.
Do you read out loud? Is there any reading out loud in school, like at older ages?
Yeah, it's actually a great thing to do. It is. And we've been taking a lot of these ideas that kids are sharing with us and taking them into the schools and into the contests and into the whole Hooked on Books campaign is really continually being created by kids from all different schools. We have a whole group of kids in at Capitol High who are helping us with this, kids from ATC and Monte. We really have representatives from about 12 different schools.
Now, when you're getting hooked on books, do graphic novels count? Yes.
Yeah, any type of book.
Yeah, for us right now, we feel like any kind of book that gets a kid hooked is awesome.
We just want them to pick up a book.
Yeah.
So then they can, you know, if they start with simple books, then they can move on to harder books.
Yeah, and Tokara said something earlier about an aha book. And I think for a lot of kids, they don't find that aha book. And for me, at least, when I found that aha book, which is probably the Hunger Games series by Suzanne Collins, I really realized that, you know what, reading is awesome. So when you find that aha book, a light goes off in your head, I think, and you're immediately hooked.
And yeah. What happened was when we went to the schools, most of the kids told us, we visited about 20 different schools, they told us they're not really allowed or reading novels in schools right now, they're just reading the Treasures textbook. And so this was an idea our kids had to motivate kids to pick up novels and books for fun on their own. And kids told us that they were for the first time doing it because they wanted to win the prizes. And so the idea was, well, if they'll do it to win these prizes, like if you really want a snowboard or an iPod or an iPad, and then you pick up a great book and it totally grabs you, you'll never lose that. You'll
right.
actually, you can become hooked.
It's like getting kids addicted, basically.
Mm-hmm. That is the idea, yes. We often use the crack connection there in class.
Where, like, kids so often, especially in high school, they get addicted on bad things. So we want to make a good difference and get them addicted, like hooked on good things, like reading.
I guess we're trying to make it like it's so easy to get hooked on video games and television and drugs and alcohol. And we're trying to make it so we're making it easy to get addicted to books. I think it's a lot more difficult to get addicted to books.
Well, they don't provide this sort of adrenaline rush and the endorphins and all those kinds of things which those kinds of games and so mm-hmm. on are designed to do. And it's hard, in a way, it's hard to compete with them. But once you get, I mean, there's a beautiful thing about getting lost in a book to where when it's over, you miss it.
Yeah, I have that feeling all the time.
Do you?
And once you're hooked on books, you just, especially if you have this one aha book, I think, in my experience, I've just wanted to read it no matter what. And so I think if you can find a book that you really like, then I think you should read it, and maybe that can help you with your later life and how literature helps your life.
Yeah, I mean, so when you talk about books, are young people reading on Kindles and iPads and things like that, or mostly like books made of paper with covers?
Yeah, a lot of schools, the kids we were speaking with had never heard of a Kindle yet. So the few who had were very excited, and we showed a lot of kids, and they were very excited by the idea. So that's part of it, too, is helping them see that there's all these new ways you can read books as well. There's a lot of great books online that you can read. But for the most part, we're talking about kids who don't have a lot of books in their homes. So that's why Tier 2 is getting free bookshelves out all over town in places where kids have to wait with their parents for many hours. So we already got permission. Arroyo Chamiso's hosting, too, and Urgent Care's hosting, and St. Vincent's Emergency Room is hosting, and Hopewell's Community Center. There's a whole bunch of places in town that are going to let us put a bookshelf, the DMV, with lots of free books. So we're having book drives now, all the schools and lots of kids, and we hope every business in town will start to collect books so we can put them and keep restocking the free bookshelves.
And sometimes we're going to the Adelante homeless groups with kids, and where we've passed out books and read to the kids so that they can at least have some of that base.
Yeah. I mean, there's a kind of confidence that happens, and you have to get over that hump. I have a friend whose son, I think he's in second grade, and he can really not really read, and he has no confidence in reading. And so there's an emotional piece of it, which is that for him, reading is associated with feeling bad about himself. And I've been, you know, I now have, my house is full of Dr. Seuss books, so that when they come over, we can at least hop on Pop or whatever, but it's still hard because he doesn't want to do it.
So that's why we have these contests, because every kid who enters, they get a free wristband that says Hooked on Books. They're all different colors depending on the contest. And they get a certificate of appreciation. They get honored by their whole class. Their name goes in a lottery for prizes, even if they don't win a contest. So it's very reinforcing to kids. So we can read a Dr. Seuss book, draw a cover, write why he liked it or dictate why he liked it, why he chose it, and he has a chance to win right away just from entering.
Yes. So this is Santa Fe or statewide, or how far is the scope?
Right now, it's pretty much based in Santa Fe. We do have some support from the Pueblos. And
Santa Clara Day School is part of it.
And so do you hope to expand out wider beyond the city?
We're starting in our backyard right now, and hopefully maybe by the end of this year. I should mention 2012 is our official year. Actually, the mayor declared it 2012 as the year of the book. So we thought that was pretty special. And yes, our hope by the end of 2012, it may go nationwide, even worldwide.
Very interesting. Yeah. Do we have some cities have those citywide, everybody reads the same book? What are those things called? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yep, I do.
Do we do that here?
We don't.
We should do that.
Yeah, one of the people in the Santa Fe Public Schools said she wanted to do that and get everybody reading
the same
book.
Get the whole city reading the same book.
Is that the Battle of the Books?
No, it's not the Battle of
the Books. It has a name. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
We should just get the word out and
we're hoping to get a lot of businesses supporting. Like, you can sponsor a bookshelf and get advertising for the whole year on the bookshelf. We're hoping to find celebrities who want to be prizes and meet kids who enter the contest. We're looking for a band to do, like, a kickoff contest, a kickoff celebration.
Yeah, we want to have really fun initiatives to get them hooked on books.
Kids came up with all the prizes. Like, they want to have a bedroom makeover as a prize, so we're hoping to find someone who can do a makeover.
But it has to have a bookshelf.
Definitely has to have a bookshelf.
A favorite of mine was you get to be principal for a day.
Right. These are all prizes that kids came up with.
That's a really scary good idea. They'd have to make a movie about it.
That was actually an entry to our first contest.
Yes. And then there's a third tier to the program, which is providing, you know, when we have all these great contests, it's going to become kind of clear that there are some kids for whom reading is still really a struggle. So we're hoping to have after school and a really exciting summer reading program to have intensive reading help for the kids in the early grades who just need that extra support and encouragement.
Yeah. Well, this is a fantastic program. Now, if there are people listening who would like to get involved, whose maybe school isn't participating, or they just want to be involved in some way, what should they do?
We have a website. It's NM, both capitals, Alliance for Literacy.
NMAllianceForLiteracy.org.
And we also have a YouTube channel. It is Lit Alliance, LITALLIANCE. No capitals, no spaces. And we have a couple videos on there.
Excellent.
Yep.
Well, and there's an email, AllianceForLiteracy@yahoo.com. People can write to us.
So these are all ways, and we'll link all of those on the website.
Yeah, and also, if you're just wanting to help, you can donate books. And if you're a kid, you can join a contest. Go to our website for that. And also,
do the books have to be, like, a certain age level or reading level?
No, just, you know, pick up a book that you think is appropriate for your age and your reading level. And also, when you're entering the contest, feel free to write in your native language. So it doesn't have to be in English.
Right, right. And there's also a Facebook page, which I guess you can get to by just putting in the Facebook search box, Hooked on Books.
Hooked on Books, right. And it says Hooked on Books, Real Kids into Reading.
Okay, so people can find that if they go on Facebook. And this is all designed so that if you don't have a computer, you don't have computer access, you can still participate.
Yeah.
So kids can come to our Saturday meetings if they want to help be an organizer, be part of Youth United. There's one coming up this Saturday. So they can just call 438-8585.
438-8585. Well, thank you all for being here. Raina Dineen is the principal of the Santa Fe School for the Arts and Sciences. Students Logan John Luis and Tilkara Webb, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.